Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is the next in a series looking at the financial implications of Russia's invasion of Ukraine on the global economy. And in today's episode, I want to talk about what's going on in the Russian economy itself and what's happening with regards to Russia's reserves. Now, whenever I make a video like this, there's always lots of comments in the section below from people saying that I'm biased towards the West, I'm making up all of these facts, and that Russia is doing absolutely fine and the sanctions are having no impact whatsoever. But in today's video, what I want to share with you is some comments that have been provided by two of Russia's oligarchs. So these are guys who are very close to President Putin and are seriously wealthy individuals. So in today's episode, we'll have a look at comments made by Oleg Deripaska, who in 2008 was actually the richest person in Russia and the ninth richest person in the world. And he's come out and made some very controversial statements about when Russia's reserves will actually run out if the war carries on at its current rate. And alongside those comments, we'll have a look at comments that he's also made with regards to the war itself, as well as a recent employee publication that's been given by Mikhail Friedman, another Russian oligarch who's very close to President Putin. We'll then go on to an in-depth look of the current state of Russia's reserves, what's going on with the National Wealth Fund, what gold and foreign exchange reserves Russia is holding, and what's happening with regards to the latest financials. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summaries to what I think is likely to happen to Russia's reserves over the course of 2023, and what the implications of this will be for the Russian economy. So before we get started on all of that, if I could ask you for a thumbs up at some point during this video, if you're enjoying the content, please subscribe if you haven't done so already. Don't forget, I always include chapters, so if you don't have time to watch everything, you can pick and choose what you'd like to see. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below where you'll find links to YouTube Super Thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me a Coffee and Patreon. And as always, thank you so much to everyone that has supported the channel. Really appreciate it.
In the last 24 hours, we got reaction from two Russian oligarchs. One was Mikhail Friedman. He's the founder and chairman of Alpha Group and Alpha Bank. That's one of the banks that's had sanctions imposed in recent days. And he wrote to his employees and he had said this: "This crisis will cost lives and damage two nations who have been brothers for hundreds of years. While a solution seems frighteningly far off, I can only join those whose fervent desire is for the bloodshed to end." He's a Russian citizen, but he grew up in Ukraine. His parents, he says, still lives there. And then there was Oleg Deripaska. Now, he was the founder and chairman of Rusal, the big aluminium giant, and he took to Telegram and said this. In fact, he's had a few telegrams today. "Peace is very important. Negotiations need to start as soon as possible." This is highly unusual. We are seeing public political announcements from some of Russia's elite.
So before we go on to talk about Oleg Deripaska's comments with regards to Russia's reserves, I wanted to pick up on these two statements with regards to the ending of the war. Both of these oligarchs have come out and made public statements that they are looking for the war to end. And this is very unusual because the oligarchs in Russia are a tight-knit community. All of these guys made billions of dollars from the breakup of the old Soviet Union. All of the previously nationalized industries were privatized, and certain individuals were given large shares in all of those companies and benefited massively. And President Putin has very strong ties with all of these individuals. And in his recent address to the whole of Russia, he made it very clear that in his mind, the West started this war, and that Russia effectively had no alternative but to go in and to defend the people against what they saw as an oppressive Ukrainian regime. And President Putin also made it very clear that Russia will not back down from the fight, and he stated that Russia cannot be beaten in the battlefield. So the official position on the war is crystal clear. It is not ending anytime soon, and Russia is not looking for a peace settlement. So these statements by these two oligarchs are completely contrary to the official Russian position. And the big question is, why are these guys doing this? Well, in order to partly answer that, let's look at their entries on the Forbes Rich List. Forbes are currently estimating that Oleg Deripaska has a net worth of $2.9 billion. And if we have a quick look at his profile, you can see that he was the founder of Basic Element, a Russian industrial group with interests in aluminium, energy, construction, agriculture, and more. And as mentioned at the start of the video, in 2008, he was the richest person in Russia and the ninth richest person in the world. However, he lost nearly all of his assets due to crashing markets and heavy debts. But that situation was subsequently turned around by a public listing of the shares in November 2017, which raised around $1.5 billion. And this is the part that I really wanted to look at here, the wealth history for Oleg Deripaska. If you look at 2014, you can see that his net worth was $6.5 billion. However, following Russia's invasion of Crimea, that net worth fell to around $2.1 billion. It stayed at 2.1 in 2016. However, over the next couple of years, there was a large increase and it got back up to 6.7 billion. But since 2018, you can see that there's been a serious reduction in his net worth. And in 2022, it was actually estimated to be 1.7 billion. So it's recovered from that low point. If we now move on to Mikhail Friedman, you can see that his net worth is estimated to be $11.5 billion. And if we have a quick look at his summary here, you can see that he was the co-founder of Alpha Bank, Russia's largest non-state bank. And Alpha Bank is actually linked to Alpha Group, which is his conglomerate. It's the largest conglomerate in Russia. That's where he made his net worth. And you can see that in 2013, he was part of a trio that made $5.1 billion in cash when they sold their stakes in oil giant TNK-BP for $14 billion. And if we scroll down and have a look at his net worth history, you can see that in 2014, before Russia's invasion of Crimea, his net worth was estimated to be $17.6 billion. However, over the course of the last 8 years, that has come down. And in 2022, it had actually dropped to $11.8 billion before dropping further to the current estimated level of $11.5 billion. And the whole point of showing you these graphs is that over the course of the last 8 years or so, since Russia's invasion of firstly Crimea in 2014 and secondly Ukraine in 2022, the net worth of these guys has been falling. Now, as you'll be aware if you follow the channel, since Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the Russian authorities stopped publishing most of its economic data. So we don't get monthly figures for the vast majority of the economic indicators coming out of Russia. And the only people that really know what's going on are the people in charge in Russia. And these oligarchs will have a very good feel as to what's happening. And it's very clear from the public statements that have been made that these two oligarchs don't like what they're seeing. They are seeing a lot of value being eroded in Russia right now, and they're seeing their personal wealth starting to fall. And the indication from both of these statements is that they believe that the situation is going to get significantly worse the longer that this war goes on. And I think it's really interesting that the oligarchs are the first to put their hands up and say, we really need to do something about this war. We need to stop the war, because they can see their personal situations getting worse. And that's obviously starting to cause them concerns. Now, before we go on any further today, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Blinkist. One of the objectives of my channel is to pull together information from a variety of different sources, amalgamate it, and then deliver it to you in an easy-to-listen-to format. And the Blinkist app does exactly this. The Blinkist app has over 5,500 non-fiction books and podcasts in its collection, and you can learn everything about those in less than 15 minutes. And one thing that I've been using Blinkist for is to expand my investment strategies. Since Blinkist first contacted me, I've been using the app. And whilst you can read the summaries either on your phone or your tablet or your PC, you can also listen to audio versions, which is absolutely fantastic because it means you can do it while you're doing other things. And the latest book that I've used the app for is Losing My Virginity by Richard Branson, which details his entrepreneurial business life, including signing the infamous punk band The Sex Pistols in 1977.
Virgin closed the deal just in time to release the song God Save the Queen for Queen Elizabeth's 25th anniversary as Queen.
And a really great feature that Blinkist offers is Blinkist Connect, whereby you can share your account with another person. So that could be your partner or your friend or anybody you like. So it's basically a two-for-one deal. And Blinkist is currently offering Joe Blogs viewers a 25% discount, including that Blinkist Connect two-for-one membership deal and a 7-day free trial. So why don't you give it a try by clicking on the link below? Now, Oleg Deripaska has been one of the most outspoken oligarchs since the war started. And before we go on to talk about his comments with regards to Russia's reserves and when they're likely to run out, I wanted to share the details of another interview that he gave in Russian. Now, there are some subtitles on this section, but I will read those out because I know a lot of viewers actually just listen to these videos rather than watching them. He's saying, I'm troubled how quickly we abandoned everything that was achieved economically in the 1990s. There was so much suffering. People have overcome the Cold War and all the disagreements. Then we abandoned everything that we achieved in the 2000s, and now we are sitting and waiting for victory. Victory of what? Whose victory? It's a colossal mistake. It surprised me that Russia turned out to be much more of a market economy than I ever imagined. Now it's hitting Russia. That's clear to everybody, he said. I think that destroying Ukraine would be a colossal mistake, including for us. There is no potential for regime change in Russia. Speaking at an investment conference in Siberia, he said that funds have been running low, and that's why they, the Russian government, have already begun to shake us down, indicating that the Russian authorities are applying pressure on the oligarchs to provide more funding to support the war. He stated that Russia had been facing serious pressure because of Western sanctions and that Moscow and its businesses need to look to other countries which have serious resources to invest. So this is clearly a strong indication that he believes that China need to take up the slack from all of the European countries who've been exiting from Russia and start investing heavily into the Russian economy. He went on to say, "We thought we were a European country, but now for the next 25 years, we will think more about our Asian past," once again indicating that Russia needs to closely align itself to China. So these comments are obviously highly controversial and are directly opposed to all of the comments that were made by President Putin at his recent address to the nation, where he said that the Russian economy was doing very well. So in order to get to the bottom of whether Oleg Deripaska's comments have any validity, let's have a look at Russia's reserves. This chart shows the level of Russia's reserves that were disclosed at the time that the invasion of Ukraine started. Up until the point when the war started, Russia still had good trading relations with the majority of the world, including the USA. And as a result of this, it was keeping large amounts of foreign currency in banks all across the world in its own accounts. And this is what happens in the normal course of business when you're trading with lots of different countries. You keep accounts in each country in the local currency, and that means that when you need to make a purchase, you can just do a transfer in dollars in the USA, or in yen in Japan, or in pounds in the UK. And it just keeps things very simple because you can receive payments and make payments in the local currency without having to worry about exchange rates and the movement of capital and all those sort of things. So if we look at this table, you can see that the largest single disclosed asset at the time was the gold that Russia is holding within the country. And at that point, it was estimated to be worth $127 billion. Russia is a big fan of gold. It had been building up large reserves of gold. And for security reasons, all of that gold was held in the country. The second largest asset on this chart were the foreign exchange reserves that Russia had built up in China, which equated to around $81 billion. Over the last few years, Russia and China have been building their trading relations, and China represents a huge export market from Russia's perspective. And obviously, since the war started, the focus on China has increased even further. The next largest country on the list is France, and one of the reasons for this is because of the banking relationships. Prior to the invasion, SocGen, the French bank, owned a large Russian bank, and therefore there was a strong trading relationship on the finance side of things. And at the time that the war started, Russia had around $71 billion worth of assets in France. Japan is located relatively close to the eastern border of Russia, and the two countries actually share some oil and gas facilities on the island of Sakhalin. And at the point the invasion started, Russia had around $59 billion worth of assets in Japan. Germany was previously Russia's largest customer in terms of the purchase of natural gas and oil. And at the time of the invasion, Russia had around $56 billion worth of assets in Germany. Despite the fractious relationship between Russia and the USA, the USA is next on the chart with $39 billion worth of assets, followed by the UK at $26 billion, Austria, which also had strong banking relations and also was a big customer of Russian oil and gas, had around $18 billion, and Canada had around $16 billion worth of Russian assets. Now, in terms of the colour coding on this chart, this relates to the sanctions and the freezing of assets. The light grey section on the left-hand side, which includes Russia and China, have no implications whatsoever, so there was no freezing of those assets. The red sections are all countries that have applied sanctions against Russia, and all of these countries seized the entire amount of Russian assets. So Russia lost access to all of these assets immediately following the invasion. And the darker grey sections in the middle of this chart represent all of the other countries, and there was a mixture in terms of the response from these countries. But it was estimated that following the invasion, Russia lost access to $350 billion worth of overseas assets. And all of those assets are still being held. They're still frozen. There have been some calls for them to be liquidated and for the money to be given to Ukraine to support the war effort. However, that actually hasn't happened because of the international laws against this. There isn't actually any law that allows any of the countries to legally take the assets, liquidate them, and give them to somebody else. So until the war ends and we have some form of resolution, these assets will remain frozen and are still legally owned by Russia, albeit they can't access any of them. This chart shows the value of the National Wealth Fund in Russia dating back to 2008. Now, the National Wealth Fund is essentially the piggy bank of Russia. This is the cash that Russia is holding in reserve to cover its obligations in terms of its international debt and also to fund any shortfalls in terms of the national budget. And alongside the dates, the three columns that we've got here are the value of the fund in US dollars, the value of the fund in Russian rubles and the percentage that that fund relates to in terms of GDP. So what we can see here is that back in February 2008, the National Wealth Fund only had $32 billion in it, which equated to less than 2% of national GDP. So at that point, there was a very, very small amount in the National Wealth Fund. If you've been following the channel, you'll know that the losses that Russia incurred in the full year 2022 were actually more than the amount that Russia was holding back in 2008. So that basically wouldn't have covered them to be able to fund that deficit. If we now roll forward through the years, you can see by 2010, the fund was up to around $92 billion. And then stayed at around about $90 billion until 2014. And of course, that was the year that Russia invaded Crimea and annexed that whole area. And a number of sanctions were applied against Russia, and it lost some of its trading relationships. And between 2015 and 2019, we saw a reduction in the National Wealth Fund. And by 2019, it was down to $58 billion, which at that point represented around 3.7% of GDP. However, between January 2019 and November 2021, the National Wealth Fund actually increased significantly. And by the start of November 21, it was up to around $198 billion, which at that point represented around 12% of GDP. So this was a significant bolstering of the National Wealth Fund over that period. And of course, that raises the question as to why that was done. Was Russia planning for some form of event, such as the invasion of Ukraine, when it knew that it would rely upon things like the National Wealth Fund to be able to fund unexpected falls in income? Now, if we move forward to February 2022, which was just before the invasion started, the National Wealth Fund had come back down to around $175 billion, which represented around 10% of GDP. And then by the start of January 2023, it was down to $148 billion, or around 8% of GDP. Now, we'll come on to talk about the significant losses that Russia incurred in January 2023 later in the video, but those losses will need to be funded from the National Wealth Fund. And if Russia continues to lose money through the course of 2023, we could see a significant fall in the value of this wealth fund. This chart plots Russia's gold reserves dating back to January 2020, and the scale on this chart is shown in tons. So this isn't a value chart, this is actually a weight chart. And one thing that's worth highlighting here is that the scale on the right-hand side starts at 2,292 tons. So what looks like a major drop in the amount of gold reserves in the middle of this chart isn't really as significant as it looks at first glance, because the baseline here is 2,292. So there was a small dip, but overall Russia has had significant gold reserves throughout the course of the last 3 years. So I'm not a gold expert, and I doubt that you are either. So really what we want to know is, how much are these gold reserves actually worth? Nobody's really interested in tonnage. We want to know what the deal is in terms of dollars. And to answer that question, let's have a look at the price of gold. And the scale on the left-hand side here is in dollars, and we are talking about ounces of gold. And this chart shows the movement in prices over the last 5 years. So if we look at the price of gold 5 years ago, it was trading for around $1,600 per ounce. You can see that after a brief dip in the price at the start of 2018, the price of gold rose steadily through to July 2020, when it was trading for around $2,250 per ounce. However, since that high point, it's actually come back down and is now trading for around $1,850. So higher than it was 5 years ago, but obviously less than it was around 2.5 years ago. So if we now jump back to this chart, we know that the price of gold is $1,850 per ounce. But the big question is, how many ounces are there in a ton of gold? Well, the answer to that is 32,000. So that means that one ton of gold is worth around $59 million. So the current level of gold that Russia's sitting on of 2,298 tons equates to a monetary value of around $139 billion. So essentially the amount of gold that Russia's holding is very similar to the amount of cash that it's holding in its national wealth fund. This chart shows the value of Russia's foreign exchange reserves over the last 12 months. Now, as with the previous chart, the scale on the right-hand side here doesn't start at zero. It actually starts at $540 billion and goes up to $620 billion. And if we look at what's happened over the course of the last 12 months, between February and September, there was a marked reduction in the amount of foreign exchange reserves. However, since September, we've seen a gradual increase back up to the current level of around $600 billion. Now, that sounds like a lot. That sounds like Russia is sitting with an enormous amount of cash, which it quite clearly is. However, foreign currency reserves are not the same as national wealth fund and gold reserves. Those reserves are genuine reserves. You just leave them in the bank and you only touch them in case of emergency when you need something. When you're talking about foreign currency reserves, this is your trading account, because Russia is doing deals all around the world all the time. So money is coming in from the sale of oil and gas and other commodities, and they're also paying things out for all of their purchases. So this is very similar to your checking account. And as with your checking account, the balance can go up and down on a daily basis. So the day after you've just been paid your salary, it looks great. You've got loads of money in your checking account. However, once you've then paid your mortgage and bought all your groceries and done all the other things that you do each month, that value might fall significantly. And the same thing applies to foreign currency accounts for countries. So this account shouldn't really be used to fund long-term losses that are occurring in the economy, because this is a trading account. The money's coming in and going out on a constant basis. This chart shows Russia's national debt between 2017 and 2023. So what this shows is that back in 2017, Russia's total debt was sitting at around $214 billion. In 2018 and 2019, that figure grew gradually. However, there was a large jump in 2020 to around $336 billion. The figure rose again to around $363 billion in 2021, increased further to $399 billion in 2022. And the national debt is currently estimated to increase to around $425 billion by the end of 2023. So what we're seeing here is a marked increase in the amount of debt that the Russian authorities are taking on. And this essentially relates to their spending. They're spending more than they're earning, and therefore the way they're funding that currently is by raising more debt. Now, obviously, the international debt markets are closed to Russia, and there was a lot of debate in 2022 as to whether or not Russia defaulted on its debt. It has around $40 billion of international bonds, which is relatively small given the size of the country. However, because of the financial sanctions, Russia was unable to actually make the interest payments. None of the financial institutions were permitted to accept the money, and the US authorities were stating that there was then a default on the debt because the money hadn't been paid. Now, the Russian authorities objected to that. They said that they'd put the money into an escrow account. It was available if the institutions wanted to take it, and therefore, from Russia's perspective, they deemed that there was no default. Now, in terms of whether there is or there isn't a default, this is really just a technicality. When we look at countries that have defaulted on their debt, the reason for those defaults is that they don't have the money. They can't actually afford to make the payments, and therefore they default and they have to go into some form of restructuring discussion. The reason that Russia's in this situation is obviously directly related to the war and the sanctions. So they have the money and the capacity to repay, they just don't have the ability to make the payment because the systems have been blocked. The financial results for full year 2022 for the Russian economy represented the single worst year in Russia's history, excluding the COVID pandemic, which is an anomaly. Full year income was actually up by 10% as a result of the increase in oil prices. But because expenditure was more than 25% above the full year budget, as a result of all of the additional spending for the Ukraine war, the full year deficit was $47 billion. And this deficit was funded entirely by drawdowns from the National Wealth Fund. So this was obviously an unexpectedly bad outcome. However, the situation has got materially worse in January 2023. Slumping energy revenues and soaring expenditure pushed Russia's federal budget to a deficit of 1.76 trillion rubles, which is around $25 billion, in the month of January, as sanctions and the cost of Russia's military campaign in Ukraine choked the economy's prospects. Figures published by Russia's finance ministry showed that revenues were down by more than 46% to 426 billion rubles in January, compared with the same month from 2022. And this shortfall has been attributed primarily to the lower price being achieved for Russia's oil sales and also the lower volumes of natural gas exports. Non-oil and gas revenues were also 28% lower at 981 billion rubles, which is attributed to lower domestic VAT and income tax. Overall, budget revenues for January were down by over 35%, while spending was up by almost 59% to 3.1 trillion rubles, which is already more than 10% of the full-year spending plan for Russia. The Russian economy relies on income from oil and gas to fund its budget spending and has been forced to start selling international FX reserves to cover a deficit stretched by the cost of the Ukraine conflict. Now, interestingly, the Russian finance budget for 2023 is based on an average price for Russian oil of $70.10. And this compares to the oil price cap that's currently in place of $60 and the average sale price that Russia achieved in January of $49.48. So the price currently being achieved by Russia in the markets is almost 30% lower than the figure that it's budgeted for the whole of 2023. So that tells us that Russia needs to see a significant increase in that sale price, and it actually has to go above the oil price cap in order for Russia to be able to meet its budget. January's deficit already represents 60% of the whole year plan of 2.9 trillion rubles. And analysts expect the shortfall to widen to more than 5 trillion rubles if current conditions persist. So if we now look at the combined impact of what happened in 2022 and the first month of 2023, we've got a combination of a $47 billion deficit for 22 plus a $25 billion deficit for the first month of this year. That gives us a combined deficit of $72 billion. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video, firstly, because it's really interesting that Russian oligarchs are now coming out and saying that they don't support the war and that they would prefer some form of peace settlement, because that is in complete violation of what President Putin is saying and what the party line is. So that's quite an interesting position for them to take. And as I mentioned earlier in the video, these guys are much closer to what's happening in the Russian economy right now than anybody else in the world. We are only seeing a very small amount of data, and that data is being published by the Kremlin. So we are completely reliant on Russia for the authenticity of that information. But these oligarchs obviously can see what's happening firsthand. They control very large businesses within Russia, so they can see what's happening with regards to their orders, their profits, and their cash flow. And they're also under a lot of pressure from the Russian authorities to give over a lot of their cash, whether that be their personal wealth or from the company profits. So the fact that two of these oligarchs have come out and stated that they would like to see an end to the war gives us a strong indication that things are not going well. Clearly, the level of profits and cash and reserves within their businesses is at a much lower point than it was before this war started. And it looks highly likely that these pressures are now leading these individuals to come out and try to encourage President Putin to get some form of peace resolution. But possibly the most interesting comments that have been by Oleg Deripaska, and he stated that he believes that Russia's reserves could run out by the end of 2023. And I wanted to go through exactly what Russia's reserves are right now and evaluate whether or not there's any credibility to what he said. And what we've seen from today's video is that Russia has around $150 billion in its national wealth fund, its piggy bank, and around the same sort of figure in its gold reserves. So it's got access to $300 billion worth of reserves, because the other $300 billion that's sitting in overseas banks has been seized and is frozen, and they no longer have access to any of those funds. Now, as we've just discussed, the national deficit for 2022 came in at $48 billion. So if the Russian economy was to continue to run at that sort of level, that would mean that $300 billion worth of reserves would last for around 6 years. So that would indicate that Russia could keep going with this war for the next 6 years, making huge losses and still be able to fund them. However, what we've seen from the January figures is that the situation got significantly worse. And in that 1 month, Russia posted a deficit of $25 billion, which represents around 50% of the full year deficit for 2022. And if Russia continues to incur losses at the same rate throughout the whole of 2023, that would indicate that the $300 billion in reserve would only last for 12 months. So this ties in directly to Oleg Deripaska's forecast that Russia could run out of cash by the end of this year. Now, obviously, there are a lot of moving parts of the Russian economy, but if you look at the figures for January, there was actually a record amount of oil sold to India in the month. So on paper, it looks like January should have been a really strong month from Russia's perspective, because one of their objectives has been to increase the amount of oil being sold to India and China. But the big problem that Russia has is that it's lost all of its sales to Europe, which accounted historically for around 60% of all of its oil revenues. So India and China will need to increase their volumes dramatically to try to offset that. But one of the issues that Russia's facing is that it's making those sales at a discount to the market rates. So even though it might be shipping large volumes, the revenue is much lower than it was historically, because they're giving a discount of somewhere in the region of 25 to 30% against the market price. So really, there's two summaries from this video. Firstly, we're seeing Russian oligarchs now coming out and stating that they don't support the war and they're looking for some sort of peace settlement. And that potentially could be driven by commercial reasons. It could be because their businesses are starting to lose significant amounts of trade and profit and cash, and therefore they want to get back onto an even keel. But in addition to those comments, the comments with regards to Russia potentially running out of cash by the end of 2023 are really interesting, because these guys are much closer to the detail and the information than anybody else in the world. And if we're hearing from Russian oligarchs that there's a risk that Russia could run out of cash, then that has to be taken seriously. So hopefully you found today's episode interesting, informative, and thought-provoking. If you've liked what I've said, then please give me a thumbs up. And thank you for watching this video all the way through to the end. And don't forget that you can get 25% off Blinkist membership and 2 memberships for the price of 1 by clicking in the link below.